Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia, it's time for Alpharetta Business Radio, spotlighting the area's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome, everybody. This is your host, Chris Deekel. In studio with me today, I have Diane Prindle with Briggs & Associates. They help people with disabilities in the workplace find employment and in the process help employers get great employees who are dedicated and are great workers. We also have Howard Flint with Ghost Partners, and although he is a ghost, I can see him. I promise you, he really is here. It's not a disembodied voice from the great beyond. His business is social media, internet marketing, email marketing, SEO, website content optimization. So you'll really want to hear what he has to say about how to promote your business in today's media-changed world. So today we're going to start with you, Diane. Welcome to the show. Did you have any problems getting here in this wonderful spring weather?
No, and thank you for having me. And I'm waiting on wonderful spring weather. Thanks.
I think we all are. Briggs & Associates, you started, a number of years ago, is that right?
Yes, Jennifer Briggs in Roswell, Georgia, started the business 25 years ago.
And what exactly do you do? I know you work with people with disabilities to help them find employment, but explain what you do and how you do that.
Okay. The first thing we do is we find employment partners that would like to work with us. When we do find employment partners, a lot of our job is education as to what tasks in their business our folks would be really, really good at doing. Then we work and say, okay, well, within the organization, let me take an example as hospitals. We've had a lot of success in finding good jobs in hospitals, and our folks might stock a lot of medical carts. So we would work with the hospital staff to identify the tasks. We would go back and find the right person that we serve to do the job. We would help educate, and then we would train. So that's what we do.
Yeah. And what the people that come to you, or the people with disabilities, does that come from a government agency or nonprofits? How do you find those people?
Some do, and a lot of this starts in high school. We have a good relationship with the high school staffs in the communities that we serve. We serve individuals primarily with cognitive disabilities. That could be mild intellectual disability, autism, Down syndrome, could be mental health. But so we'll work with the teachers. They know that these folks are coming. They've been training in the schools for 22 years. They know as an adult they would like to have a job, and they provide good references for us.
I see. And how do you match up someone with a disability with a job?
Well, we really get to know the individual that we're looking for a job, and we know whether their skills are really good in administrative or production, just where their skills may be good. And, of course, we know our employment partners, and just by knowing both really well, we become good matchmakers.
So you're a dating service.
Whatever makes people remember us, yes. Yes, we are a matchmaking service.
Yeah. Now, the people that you're working with, do they have special challenges beyond just their disability?
Yes, many of them don't drive, and so one of their challenges is to many ride public transportation, but they certainly learn how to ride it. They learn how to take the buses, learn how to take the trains, and that's typically how they get to work.
So does that pose a problem for the employer because they have to take public transportation?
No, not at all. It's, the person's responsibility to get to work, and that's just,
How do they compare to an average employee, let's say?
On the job, there have been studies done in this area. As a matter of fact, DuPont's done several. And their average performance reviews are as good as or as better than others doing the same job. So they do very well.
If you match them to the right job, they're
that's
very
correct.
Good employees.
Yes, that's the key.
Yeah. How do other employees react to these individuals?
With a little bit of training, really well. I mean, the best thing we can do, particularly if we're serving someone who has autism or Asperger's, if we can go in and educate the coworkers and say, this is what this person has, this is what behavior you might expect, then our success is very, very good. Then they may not just look at the person and say, well, what's a little different here? Because we tell them.
Yeah. Are there misconceptions about people with disabilities or prejudices that you have to overcome?
There are. The key ones are that their insurance rates might go up because they think their accident rates will go up with people with disabilities, and that is proven not to be true. maybe that they can't do the job. That's proven not to be true. And another thing, just quite frankly, with businesses, they're a little bit afraid of ADA. They're afraid that, you know, maybe somebody's going to sue them or something. But, you know, these things really just don't happen day to day. So those are myths that we've been able to overcome.
Explain the ADA thing.
Well, some employers are afraid that with the ADA rules that if they take in to their workplace.
And ADA stands for those of us not in the know.
I'm sorry. The American with Disabilities Act, which has done a lot to open up doors in the workplace for people with disabilities. But people are afraid that if for some reason their performance of the individual, the production of the individual, something happens, businesses can be afraid that they may not be able to make a change to get the right employee. And that is a myth. And with our support, that very much can be done.
Are they better off as far as ADA compliance to have reached out to try to bring someone in, even if it doesn't work out, or if they have to change, that they make a really legitimate effort to try to integrate these people into the workplace?
I believe it is. I believe that fear is never a reason not to give something a try.
Amen. We gave this a try.
We did.
What jobs in a company or the people you serve particularly good at it? Are there characteristics of those jobs?
There are, depending on the individual's disability. For example, maybe someone with autism or another type of disability, a repetitive job may be good. In a corporate office job, for example, we might have someone who does really well processing travel and expense statements and does so well that if they could just do them and do them and do them, that their production and volume becomes very, very good. In a hospital environment, and we work in many hospitals in the Atlanta area, repetitive jobs such as stocking medical supplies in carts is critical because those supplies need to be the same every day, done properly every day. So that accuracy is something we excel in.
And why is that? People with cognitive disorders are not exactly the first people you would think of as being good at that job.
Well, let's even say an HR filing job. Our folks, in a generalization, tend to thrive once they really learn the job and thrive in the repetitive nature of the job. Someone else, for example, may accept a job at that level in an organization simply to get their foot in the door and to get promoted to another job. Our folks thrive in the repetitive nature, want to stay there long term, 7-8 years, reduce the turnover, and continue to do the job well.
When you're working with an employer, how do you find employers in the first place? Do they come to you? Do you reach out to them? How do you find them?
You know, this year we've had our very first ones that I can remember come to us. That's unusual. They came to us, and let me share why. When E-Verify rules came into being in a lot of companies, particularly distribution companies, you know, a lot of companies found that they did have some undocumented workers out there. And all of ours are documented, and we do a very, very good job. So that was a reason with legislation that employers started coming to us. And we love it, and thank you, and we hope more do. We mostly go to companies through networking. We find ways to network with executives within different companies, and when we find an individual who has the power and the passion, they will champion our cause, and then we get in.
Are there organizations around town that have proven to be champions of what you do?
Yes. We would note several. Emory Healthcare has hired 40 individuals that we serve in various administrative and clinical positions. Children's Healthcare of Atlanta has hired 30. The Georgia Aquarium has hired 10, and they're documented on our website as to just how well we have done. So we absolutely have found some champions in the website, and they are helping us find others in their same industry. So it's growing well in that direction.
Who's most resistant to this, employer-wise?
Oh, I'd have to think of the type of employer.
Large ones, small ones?
No, I can't say by size. I would just say if we can't find a champion inside, human resources people will be resistant to us because they kind of want to keep us out. But if we,
now,
because
why
we,
would that be?
Well, because we might not fit a job description exactly. You know, as we say, part of this is doing business not as usual. And if there's a job description and we can't fit every point in the job description, of course we wouldn't be considered for the job. But if we can get someone to say, well, we might be able to tweak this a little bit, and this person could do this part of it far better, more accurate and productive, that's when we really, really have success. When there's a little bit of an open mind there, a little bit of business not as usual, that's when we have our greatest level of success.
Have a little flexibility and help people that
need help. Exactly, yes.
What's alternative for those people if someone doesn't reach out to help them like that?
It's pretty bad. Studies show that, for example, individuals with cognitive disabilities graduating from high school, if they don't have a company such as Briggs & Associates providing this level of support for them, 80% of them are unemployed. 80% graduate from high school at age 22 and go back home and sit at home and are unemployed.
And as a taxpayer, do we support those people in some way that if we could get them employed, it would help us as taxpayers?
Yes, that's an excellent question. First of all, we've supported them all through school as taxpayers. When they graduate, we would continue to support them through Social Security or otherwise. When they become employed, and the reason we really love this program, they love to work, they become taxpayers. That's a win-win.
That is a win-win. So everybody should have an interest in promoting this in their company to some degree, to whatever level, if there are jobs that these people can do. It's a good thing for everybody.
It's an excellent thing for everyone. And our mission is there is a place and means for every man alive. And that's just what you just said. It's very important.
So for an employer, is there a charge for them to have you come in and work with them and do this? Or how are you funded, and what's the cost to the employer?
There is no cost to the employer. Our primary source of funding is the state of Georgia Medicaid funds, because if you have a disability, you're eligible to apply for these funds. If you are awarded the funds, then as an individual, you can choose a company like Briggs to help you with this, and that's how it's funded. It is not passed along to the employer, and in fact, the employer gets tax breaks for what they do.
So there's really no reason not to do this. Reach out and find out if there is an opportunity to improve your productivity with one of your employees.
There's no reason not to do that. Thank you.
Well, great. Tell me, Diane, if people want to find out more about this, get in touch with you and Briggs and Associates, how do they do that?
Well, they could contact me, Diane Prindle, 404-290-6860. They could look at our website to learn more, which would be www.briggsassociates.org. They could listen to this radio station.
And, great idea.
And listen to this radio station, and you can tell them just how to click onto this radio station, and we will be, you know, putting this on our websites as well.
Fantastic. Well, can you remain in our studio for our next guest?
Yes, I'd love to.
Thank you. Well, welcome, Howard. I know I'm not. You're here in the flesh. You're not disembodied, Howard.
That's correct.
Flint with Ghost Partner, and tell us about Ghost Partner, who you are, what you do, and how you came into being.
Well, first of all, thanks, Chris, for having me on the show. And Diane, it was nice to meet you. Ghost Partner is a full-service marketing company with a specialty in content creation. So we work with companies that, for example, want to get a newsletter out. They've wanted to get a newsletter out for a while. They haven't had the means to do it or the consistency, or maybe now they want to have a blog or they want to be on social media. That's the sort of things we help with. We can come in, learn about your business, and start writing for you.
Now, why is doing that important? Because, you know, we've been watching Mad Men on TV, and we grew up, a lot of us, in the age of, you know, mass media. What has changed in the world of media, and how has that impacted why what you do is, A, come into being, and B, why it's important?
A few reasons. First of all, the internet, really the center of our universe as far as marketing and presence, is the internet these days. I mean, it's still important to do direct mail. Radio is still very relevant. There's other things out there. But really, for the internet, the center of that internet universe is content. Everything is content on the internet. And our lives on the internet are really ruled by people like Google and Facebook and Yahoo and Bing. And what they've said is that if you want to come up in good search rankings with us, you need to have really good content. And not just good content, but it needs to be original content, and it needs to be fresh. and you have to put it out on a regular basis. So that's what we work with companies that have to come up good in the organic search rankings, not just the paid rankings, and they just want to make sure that their services are read about, whether it's their current clients or whether it's new prospects or the search engines. You've got to have good content.
And you had a publishing company before this. I know you had another business that you sold. Can you tell us a little about that and how you used what you learned there to catapult you into this business?
Right, right. Yeah, I sold a business in 2007 called Buzz Publishing. And that was, by today's standards, kind of old school. It was print and it was postage. And we did newsletters for specific software programs like QuickBooks software or Act software, Peachtree accounting software. And so people would subscribe and we would print up the issues every month that we wrote up. We'd mail it off to them. And I always thought, this is a great business if I could get rid of the printing and postage. That I think that really this is, it's coming down the line here where people are going to be reading this online and see just as much value in reading it online as they do getting a printed publication in the mail. In other words, I don't necessarily have to change what I charge for this newsletter just because it's no longer physical. And that's what happened. And so we were faced with a situation where somebody came to us saying, we'd like to buy your company. And usually when somebody knocks on your door and asks that question, you say yes if it's the right time. So it was the right time for us. And so what I was able to do then is just keep the content business going and said, oh, now I've lost my printing, I've lost my postage, I don't need to do that anymore, but we still can produce great content.
Has the process and type of content created changed because of the change from printed to online media?
Yeah, you can, in printed, because you were going to print something up, you might do longer form articles or multiple articles. Being online and that it's accessed at any point in time, we can spread those articles out and we can do shorter pieces, maybe parts 1, 2, and 3. We could do shorter things.
Yeah, more frequently and, keep the stuff fresh and coming out all the time.
Right, right.
Same process. You're using a lot of the same writers that you had used before.
Some of the same writers, and the nice thing about writers is they generally have a network of themselves. So we have some great writers, but if somebody comes to us and say, oh, we need a healthcare newsletter done, we reach out to our network and say, who knows somebody out there in the healthcare business? So we can generally get those writers in.
I see. And if you tried to do this yourself, as an individual, or as a single company, let's say, what all's entailed in that? I mean, what happens to the cost and, the management side of that?
Well, it depends. If you're trying to produce your own newsletter, and lots of businesses do and are very successful at doing it, the problems that they face, because we talk to a lot of these companies, is keeping this consistent. So they might say, starting in April, we're going to start doing a newsletter. And they get an April issue out and they get a May issue out. But along about June, business is hopping and everyone's looking around the boardroom saying, who's writing the July issue? And everyone's pointing to everybody else. And so all of a sudden now we had 2 months of newsletter. Your clients are very happy with that newsletter. And then you've gone silent. And so not only did you stop doing the newsletter, but you look bad because you started something you had to stop. Consistency is important. So when we talk to people, if they're doing it themselves, we always say, put together an editorial calendar, come up with some ideas so you can remain consistent.
So if you're going to start one, keep it up is the message. And
yes.
If you're going to do it well or don't start.
Correct.
And it's very, very difficult to do that month in, month out, week in, week out. And without a dedicated staff.
Right, and especially when you look at social media and blogging, I mean, the purists of the blogging world would say, blogging should be done twice a week. So now we've gone from having to be consistent on a monthly newsletter to consistent on twice a week a blog. That's a lot. Now, if you're a thought leader and, if you're running a business, you probably should be a thought leader or at least act like one. You should be putting some knowledge out there. You don't have to write War and Peace. It can be a very small thing that you put out there, but consistency is the biggest problem we find.
And what kind of impact does a blog or content like this have on the reader? They may not all be your customers. They may be prospects.
Correct.
Now, how does this affect them?
Well, it goes part of when we talk to people, we always say you have three engagement targets because content is meant to engage the reader. And you have three targets. One is your current clients. You never forget about your current clients because that really is the lowest hanging fruit. Your prospects, somebody that might have found you, heard about you, heard your show on the radio, and is coming to check you out. That's one of the first things they're going to do now is look at your content and read it. And then that third engagement target is the search engines. And they've got robots that are looking at your content. They can't read, but they're looking over your content. So what you want to make sure is that in everything that you do, you're concise, you're engaging, you don't give too much, but maybe there's a call to action in all that content too. So if someone's looking at it, they have a reason to call you or connect with you.
So it's a bit of an art in terms of how you structure that so it's not an overt advertisement. It's really a subtle call to action.
Very much so, especially when you get into social media. You know, selling on social media is a no-no. It's not, I mean, if you want to sell, email is a better format. Email is very transactional. Social media is meant to get a conversation started. It's meant to build a community. Pitching on social media, we've all been on social media when people have been out there pitching, and we generally will unfollow or will hide those people. So you've got to be careful how you couch your message.
When you sit down with a company, and what size companies, by the, I know you work with some big ones, but you know, what size companies do you work with?
Well, usually we'll say we work with anybody. But we tend to work with medium-sized to large companies. Usually it's medium-sized companies. You find a lot of industries out there because, you know, with the economy coming back, albeit slowly, with the economy coming back, you have a lot of companies, for example, manufacturing, that will be coming out of this recession and need to ramp up their marketing. Maybe they've slowed down for a few years, or maybe that was the first person they let go was the marketing director.
It probably was,
unfortunately, or the human resources person. And so now they're saying, oh, the economy's coming back. Our sales are up. We better take advantage. And so that's usually who we'll get in there and start working with.
And when you work with them, how do you work with them? What process do you go through to work with those?
Usually we come in and we talk. And when I mean talk, I mean listen. I mean, we'll ask questions and we'll listen to a lot of what they're doing. What we found a lot of success in over the past year is a process we called managed marketing, which we're writing the content, but now we're also following that content and executing it for them. So that, let's take that manufacturing company. Business is going well. They are in need of a marketing person. But what they'll do is they'll come to us and say, why don't you be our marketing department? Because I've got a whole team of people, graphics, web, writers, everything. And so now instead of having one marketing director trying to corral all that, we can do it all. So we're writing, yes, but maybe they say, oh, we need our logo freshened up. We need a new sales collateral piece. All of that is content. All of branding, sales collateral, scripts is all content. We can help with all that.
When you're writing this, I know that there's a lot of conversation, and I mean, you see it everywhere about SEO. And,
yes.
You know, for those who are not in the know about what SEO is, what is that, and what role does content play in that?
SEO means search engine optimization, and essentially is your ability to come up in organic search results with Google, Yahoo, and Bing. I do include Yahoo and Bing, but really it's Google. Google has 85% of the market.
And by organic, we mean?
So organic is when you look at a page, a result, you look up shoes, and all these results come up. At the top and on the right-hand side of the Google page, there's a shaded area. These are what's called paid advertising or pay-per-click. That only gets about 7% of the traffic. Most people are going to the first of the organic, which is the natural results that come up with that. Now, I say natural, but companies spend a lot of time and sometimes a lot of money making sure their content is such that they will come up in these results. So what you want to do is, depending on your business, you want to make sure that your website has the right keywords and phrases and geographic targets that you're looking for. So not just shoes, which would be a very big target, but you could say specialty orthopedic shoes in Atlanta, Georgia. Those are some of the terms, if that's your business, that you want to come up for. When someone searches, they find you. Content is crucial. You've got to spend some time on it to get it right.
Because the search engine spiders are looking at that content.
Right.
and through some mystery, mysterious process known right. only to Google, gives you a search ranking which determines whether you show up on the front page or the back page.
Right, and exactly. And that mysterious algorithm that only Google knows changes. And so whereas in the old days, which is 4 or 5 years ago, you would make that web page say orthopedic shoes 10 times in the first paragraph. And now Google says, oh, I can't read as Google, but I can count. And that's too many words. So I've got an algorithm that dings you and puts you farther down in the search results because you used your keyword too many times. So whereas we used to talk about keyword rich, now we talk about keyword balanced. It is a bit of an art, and it's a moving target, Chris. So you've got to be on this, and that's one of the things we pride ourselves on.
You have to, it's not known, so it's inferred. And B, you have to work with it and see what happens when you tweak this or tweak that. How did that affect the ranking?
Right, right. And whereas,
interesting.
And whereas the algorithm is a secret algorithm, Google says, okay, we're now going to, we want this, we don't want this. But I will say, to Google's benefit, they are a benevolent dictator in that they have leveled the playing field. And they said, we want fresh, original, relevant content. Okay, what they didn't say is we want million-dollar ad budgets, we want worldwide brands. No, they level the playing field so the guy selling something small as a small company really is on the same footing as the person that is a big brand. Everybody's got to play by this right rule. So if you do it right, you can come up next to the big guys in your
business. You can't game the system.
You cannot. In fact, everybody who says they've got some techniques to game the systems, there's a building full of young engineers at Google working against you. Those aren't good odds.
And for those people who offer to put you on the front page of Google search for $69.95 or $269.50 or whatever the number is,
right.
What do you say to that?
Well, I will say, because we don't make that offer, but there are people that know what they're doing. And obviously, there's a charge for that. So there's some people that know what they're doing. You just have to say, how are you going to do this for me? It's like a gardener. And he can come in and say, look, I can get everything blooming in 2 weeks. And that may not be true. But there are people that can come in and know how to plant, know how to put the right fertilizer on, and can get that garden looking beautiful. Those are the people you want to work with.
Moving on, where does email marketing, we all hear about spam and all of us
get
bucket loads of this stuff.
Right.
Where does email marketing work?
Email marketing, I do a lot of live presentations around the state on behalf of Constant Contact. I'm a local expert for Constant Contact, and my company's a platinum partner. And so when we do a seminar or a workshop on it, we always say that social media is very sexy. It's very cool. It gets a lot of attention. But email is still king. Email still reaches the more people, and it's much more highly transactional. So there's more rules to email marketing these days, and you've got to be compliant with the CAN Spam Act of, I don't know when that was, 2009, 2008. It's not difficult. It's pretty obvious stuff. You just got to make sure that everybody you're reaching out to via email has opted in to get your message. Meaning, I said, Chris, yes, you may send me stuff from Business Radio X. I'm giving you permission. You have to do that. Otherwise, you'll get dinged and you might end up on a gray list or, God forbid, a blacklist. And now you can't get through some of the big internet providers with your email. So those are some of the stuff we talk about with people, is just make sure that you've got a good list. But then be engaging in that email. Make sure it looks good. Make sure it's well written. The subject line's good. There's a lot of stuff to it, but email is still very, very powerful.
We have all heard about people being blacklisted because they sent out something. Is there some magic to what will trip? What would look like a spam to an internet service provider?
Right. There are several things. First of all, sending to somebody who didn't opt in for your list, and that person has to say, oh, this is spam. And they have to mark it and have to report it as spam. There are such things as called a bounce report, meaning that if I send out a bunch of emails, let's say I send out 1,000 emails, and 20% of those bounce, meaning it's a bad email address or it's blocked me somehow, An ISP can see those reports, and if those bounce records are high but then consistently high, meaning I keep sending out the same list and I keep those same bounces rather than remove the bounces, that's a red flag for that might be a spammer. So you've got to do several things. It's like SEO. There's several things you have to be thinking about with email to do it right. And that's one of the things we do with people is come in, make sure everything's right before they
begin. So your local next-door neighbor's son in high school is probably not the guy you want to go to.
For email marketing, no. Maybe for social media, he knows what he's doing. He might be on Twitter all the time or something like that. But for email, you do have to take it seriously. I mean, at the very far end of it, with the Can Spam Act, you're liable up to $11,000 per email. And, you know, it would be your luck that you'd hit a cranky lawyer on the wrong day, and they'd say, ah, I got somebody to take to court now.
Well, we'll mail the last shirt in our closet to them.
That's right.
So certainly it's not something you want to fool around with if you don't know what you're doing.
Correct. So if you use a service, and obviously we're a Constant Contact partner, but there are several services like Constant Contact. The reason you use those services, and they're pretty cheap, they're $15-$20 a month. The reason you use a service like that is to keep yourself can spam compliant, because those make it so somebody can unsubscribe from your list. Even if they opted in, they may say, you know what, I no longer want to get this. They can unsubscribe in one click. That's can spam compliance. And it makes, and you also got the ability to design it in HTML and make some very nice impact and get that message out and keep within the law.
Like any ad, it has to look professional. It has to get attention. It has to look engaging and hold people, just like
right.
any other advertisement in the world does.
Absolutely. So one of the first things we do when we work with companies that are doing email marketing, we'll go in and design an email template. A lot of times it'll match their website, just so that branding's consistent. So when I get your email, I say, did I sign up for this? Oh, yeah, Radio X. I can see the logo. I remember that. Mm-hmm. And I'm less likely to A, opt out, or B, report you as spam.
And by having an easy opt-out, one-click process, most people will give you the benefit of the doubt.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But the people that, and we've all been hammered by these, you know, robots and stuff that go out and hijack computers. I mean, you're reporting those things as spam like crazy.
Oh, absolutely. And you've got to be very careful because you could be in a long list of actual spam and just get caught up in there. And that's another thing is you may want to add a permission reminder at the top of your email. You've seen this from people and say, hi, Chris, you're getting this email because you opted in for emails from Ghost Partner. And before they hit that report spam, they go, oh, yeah, that's right, I did opt in for this.
Yeah, they recognize the name or something and say, oh, yeah, well, this wasn't just somebody trying to.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, again, not something the average person knows how to do or has the facilities for or even the time, because time is a big factor in one of these.
Absolutely, and this is one of the things that's changed over the last few years as emails become serious. And you know, you've got to be careful that, A, it works so that's productive, but, B, you're also on the right side of the law. So, yeah, take some time and get it done right.
You mentioned social media. What's social media good for? What do you advertise? How do you, first of all, what kind of product or service is a good thing to, you know, to have on social media? And, you know, how do you use that to attract prospects?
You know, social media is great for starting a discussion, adding into a discussion, or building a community. So, first of all, social media is no good to you if no one's following you. So you could have zero followers and you could put a lot of time into that content. It doesn't matter because nobody's reading it. So we always talk about, well, how are we going to build your social media follows and how are we going to do this for you? Because you really need to have those people on there sharing and stuff. But social media is a place where you share your expertise. You ask questions of your community, and you just try to be a central discussion area. Again, we always push that as a business, really whatever you do. Clearly somebody like you, Chris, being a thought leader, being somebody that's out in front, you know, having original thoughts or passing on great stuff from the community or the marketplace, that's where people go and say, oh, I need to read what he says, or I need to read the things he reads. That's the sort of thing that we try to do for people if they haven't done it for themselves already. Social media is perfect for that.
So it's a way to build an impression of what you're like. What are your values? You know, and inferentially, it builds credibility.
Correct.
And a preference for you because, you know, I feel like I know this person.
Right.
And you buy from people who you know, you trust, you like. You seldom buy from people that you don't trust, don't like, and can't stand.
Right. No, you hit the right word, and that's trust. Like any brand marketing, and so this goes all the way back to Mad Men, it was all about building trust with a brand. And if you felt good about Coca-Cola, or in Mad Men days, Lucky Strikes or something like that, if you felt good about that brand in its imagery and its advertising, you would do business with the brand. These days, all that remains the same. But now social media gives you really a free outlet. Again, you got to get the followers, but a free outlet to share that brand and to share that experience. And so that, you know, Twitter, I think, has a higher percentage of people following brands on Twitter. And again, you're limited to 140 characters, so I'm not going to read a dissertation by Coca-Cola, but I might follow Coca-Cola or some other more local brand just to see what they're up to and see what they're coming out with.
If it's an exciting product or if it's particularly relevant to you, you might be in some obscure industry.
Right.
But it could be something you're vitally interested in, and if that's your industry and you're the thought leader in it, people are going to watch.
Absolutely.
Read.
Absolutely. In fact, we have that discussion. We'll go into a company. Let's go back to manufacturing. And they'll say, there's no way anyone's on Twitter talking about, you know, the new technology of the fluorescent bulbs that we create. And I'll say, I bet there is. And we'll pull up Twitter and I'll do a search. And, you know, it might be, you know, the leaders of the industry in GE. And GE, much bigger company than you, is out there putting people on Twitter, you know, putting out content, starting that discussion. Wouldn't you like to be part of that influencer group?
Absolutely. And you can ride on some of their coattails.
Absolutely.
If you know what you're doing and you have a coach like Ghost Partner.
Right. And that, you know, that adds into strategy. That all this talk of content is great, but it really starts with a strategy discussion. You know, we can write content all day long for you, but what is it you really want to do? What are you trying to do? Are we trying to put sales in the door? Are we trying to put people in the pews on Sunday morning? What are we trying to do for you? And then we can do the content, and then we see what vehicle's right. Maybe Twitter's right for you. Maybe it's not right for you. Strategy informs that.
So for all of the listeners who have businesses and dimly understand this, or for those of you who are trying it now and saying, gee, this is a lot of work, and I can hardly do one and do my business, how do they get in touch with Ghost Partners, Howard, so you can take over that task for them and make it better and really get the results they'd like to have?
Right. You can just go to our website, which is Ghost Partner, singular, ghostpartner.com. My email is h@ghostpartner.com, and that's really where to find out. And you'll see, you can read up on us. We'll be doing some live events coming up probably in April and May, and you can tap into some of those and come see us live and find out more.
Well, thank you, Howard. It's been great having you, and it's been great having you, Diane. We look forward to having you back sometime to talk a little bit more about the things that you do and how you help people. Would you like to do that?
Sure.
Well, thank you, and we'll always be on the lookout for great companies just like yours. If you have a business in the Atlanta area that you'd like to get the story out on, we'd love to have you on our program. If you fit our profile, you know, drop a note to chris@businessradiox.com, and maybe we'll be on here on our next show.
Thank you, Chris.